It's time for a noon kick.
Let's go, man. Come on. Let's have some fun, man.
This is Danny and Dusty on Football Friday.
You gotta see it. You gotta see it.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Ah, yes, my voice is still completely shot. Danny and Dusty, Will in for Dusty, Jordan behind the glass in for Rusty. Thank you all for being here on a Friday afternoon. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful day.
It's a football Friday. It's the last Friday.
It's the last regular season football Friday. We will have some more football Fridays, but ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourself because I'm going to be a petty king today. That we will get to the Jimmy
Butler. Did the
Butlers.
Ducks lose again? Oh, Jimmy Butler. Oh.
Well, no, the Ducks did actually lose again.
They lost again.
Hey, shut up.
They did lose again.
They did.
In historic fashion for the second time in 24 hours. And then they lost again in the recruiting world. It's been a rough 36 hours for Oregon. I'm not excited about it. That's tough for you guys. You guys quite literally need a win in that regard. But I did say last night I was at K2, you know, doing my thing for the post game show, and I brought up the different alcohols.
And again,
the choices that you can make. So somebody asked me about, you know, what we talked about on the radio today. I was like, of all the things we talked about, that was the thing I brought up. And I was like, yeah, no. And everybody in the bleeping building was like tequila. And I'm like, you know what? I feel like I need to go do God's work. And like, I just need to start like giving people good tequila. Let them experience what good tequila does.
I like tequila. I don't get why tequila gets a bad rap. Like, if I'm going to drink in the summer, I'm drinking tequila. Now, if I'm going to drink in the winter, I'm drinking bourbon.
You like brown water.
Well, I want to warm up a little bit.
Tequila warm you up.
Well, see, I don't want to be all that warm in the summer. I'm going to start sweating. I'm a sweaty guy. Sweater. I don't need to be sweating as much as possible. Like, I'm going to... But the other thing with tequila, and I know this is wrong, it's kind of an upper. Like, I know that all alcohols are really downers.
But no, it does make you feel like...
You're more excited.
You want to have more fun.
Yeah, I think tequila is a great summer drink. And I don't get why it gets a bad rap.
I know we have a lot of people on the fan who listen who are, number one, raging alcoholics, which get help.
Hell yeah.
Number two.
Dry January.
Yes, who work in the alcohol industry. I have the alcohols that I like.
Mm-hmm.
Like I actually tried to become kind of a wine snob.
Why?
When I was overseas, I spent a bunch of time in southern Spain, and I found like, oh, I like southern Spanish reds.
Mm-hmm.
The wine.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. The wine. Happily married man to an Italian woman. But I was like, oh, I kind of want to get into this. And then I was like, this is really expensive, and I don't have this kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was watching something the other night. This is again, the joys of being married is I never get to control my TV. My wife had some reality show on, which seemingly is on all the time. And it was, they were at some restaurant and they were asking the sommelier, the wine expert.
Yeah. The guy who smells the wine and then tells you where it's from and
it knows all the things about it.
You can taste this oaky flavor.
Hints of tobacco.
Mm, exactly. And they were talking about the idea of like, what's the actual price range of like somebody who like actually knows wine.
Mm-hmm.
Like what a good bottle of wine is and what it should cost versus just being a giant douche canoe. Like, what is that dividing line?
It's when you start buying more than barefoot.
What do you think? Like, this wasn't just the sommelier. Like, a vineyard owner like came over. Like, who owned the restaurant and the vineyard? Like, she came over and they were having a good conversation. But he was like, yeah. Like, what's the line of demarcation for douchebag?
I'm not gonna lie. I think it also age matters, right? Because if you're 27 years old. And you're coming up to me.
Oh, I thought the age of the wine.
No. I'm talking about the person. If I met someone that was my age and was like, hey, do you want to come back over? Like, I've got some sweet reds and some sweet white wine that you might want to try. I'm not going to hang out with that person. I think that person kind of sucks. Now, if it was someone who was more closely to like your guys' ages, late 30s, early 40s, even like older, like you start getting into 50s, 60s, that might be someone where I'm like...
The way you said older there, it's...
You're older than me.
I know, but the way you said older with 50s and 60s...
Ancient mofos, that was like, you.
Like you. The R you used on the end of older...
That is older.
I mean, just saying, it wasn't a hard R, but it was...
that's an old... That is older than me.
You had some hate behind it. I don't know if I like that.
No, I don't hate anyone who's old. Just be aware that you're old. If you're older like that and you like wines... You might not necessarily be a douche. I think it's something that you have to like grow into. It's like learning to eat broccoli. You don't do it as a kid. Mm. When you're a kid, you don't drink wine, or at least you're not drinking any good wine. It's like,
my dad's using box wine.
Right. Like my dad's getting into bourbons. Yeah. So because of my dad getting into bourbons, I'm getting into bourbons. Now, at times, I'll start showing my buddies bourbons, and my buddies will give me the old, well, you're kind of a bourbon douche because I know. What bourbons are good based on, like, hey, if you like it a little hotter, you like it a little less hot, you know, whatever. So I think it's an age
thing. I love how you're using hot and bourbon in the same, like, nomenclature.
Yeah. Well, that's how I determine it for my buddies. Like, do you want to warm up real quick, or do you not want to warm up real quick?
Okay. 27-year-old trying to talk to us about wine. I don't know how that's going to go. I'm going to guess, like, it's like a $20 or $30 bottle. Like, that's the level that people will actually find good taste at, and above that you're probably starting to look like a douche, because I don't really know how much of a difference the taste is from like a $20 bottle to an $80 bottle.
So they said, like, for you to get like a legitimately good bottle of wine, it's somewhere between $75 and $100. Like, that's where you can like find like good, genuinely good wine.
Okay.
The line of demarcation for douchebag of like, you're just spending money because you want to be like, you go to a restaurant and you want everyone in the restaurant to know that like you pop bottles, $700.
What?
That is because they're like, look, you can buy wines that are thousands of dollars,
which is crazy to me, but
thousands, not like a couple, tens of thousands of dollars.
That's too much money. I'm not spending thousands of dollars on any, like no alcohol.
But $700 is like the max amount of money that you should ever spend on, like, and these are, and this is what this woman, she's like, she goes, and I'm talking about people that like have the most sophisticated palates on the planet. Like there's spot where you can get to where like everything else beyond that, it's pretentiousness. And then the guy looks at the menu, he goes, you have a bottle for $1,200 right here. She goes, exactly.
Right.
So she's like, I'm not stupid. I know people are douchebags and want to pay the money for it. So I think she had like a $7,000 bottle on the menu.
Well, yeah. And you always do the high price stuff to make people buy like the mid stuff. You always put
on there because she's like, no, douchebags will buy this.
So
like that, she's like, she flat out said it was like, she's like, no, like this is for the people who are arrogant and dumb. It's basically,
these people suck.
They're not a good hang, but I'm going to take their money, which, to be honest, great business model.
So then
great business model.
So what's the closest comp to this then? Is this clothes? Because I feel like clothes falls right into this category as well. Like, remember when Kanye West was selling a plain white shirt for like $300, but people were buying it because it was Kanye brand?
The Mark Zuckerberg special?
Yes. Exactly.
He pays like $1,100 for a t-shirt to look like he's a normal person.
It's
made with the spine of an Egyptian child.
Whenever I met someone who had like Supreme back in high school and college, I instantly was like, that guy sucks.
Yeah,
that guy is horrible. Yeah. I don't want to be around that guy. Like, I'm over here at Old Navy and Macy's.
I see off-white tags on shoes, and I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah, no, if you showed up wearing, what was it, the Roshis, was that Kanye's shoe? You showed up wearing those. I was like, you suck. Like, that's $200 for, you could get a better shoe for $20.
Yeah, no, I thought that was interesting. That was where the path that we devolved down last night. So, how are you guys doing? Since I managed to derail the show right out of the gate, you guys doing good?
I'm doing well. I'm now like kind of caught in this. Like, what else can we equate to what makes you a D-bag?
Right?
Lots.
The line of demarcation.
An easy spot. Because, like, with clothing, it's an easy spot. Like, is there another, is it food, restaurant choice? Because, like, if you're a foodie, like, how good can the food really get to before it's like, all right, there's no real difference.
Have either of you eaten at a legitimate 5-star restaurant?
Not a 5. I mean,
not
like
that
a,
I know of.
No, I don't think. I mean, I ate at whatever the one here in Oregon is in Newburgh that's like the special.
The Painted Lady.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes. I've been to the Painted Lady. I think that's probably
a 5-star.
So, yeah. Yes.
It's the only 5-star restaurant in the state.
Yeah.
The best one I would have eaten at is probably Fogo de Chao.
Fogo de Chão is so
It's so very good, but definitely not five star.
Yeah.
No, it's just Brazilian meat on a stick. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Look, the caballeros come by with the skewer, and it's quite nice. Mm-hmm. But no, I believe the Painted Lady chef has...
makes you a five star?
It's a rating system that comes through.
Yeah, like, it somehow has to do with tires.
Well, that's Michelin.
Yeah, that's the Michelin star Michelin system. Stars. Which that's only different. Go up to four.
Oh.
Yeah, and I think there's only one... four star in the world. I think for the most part, the highest you see is three.
There's got to be like a handful, and yeah. I think the closest even Michelin star restaurant to where you and I all sit right now is Vancouver, Canada. So they are few and far between.
Vancouver, Canada?
Yes.
What's in Vancouver, Canada?
Well, that's a big city. It's a tourist hub.
No, I understand that. I'm asking what the restaurant is. I have a
what's
passport
in it?
I'd like to go.
That's a good Michelin star.
I can make it up there.
Look, the Vancouver Ford text line is chiming in. 503-864-6326.
They got like five of them.
The closest comp to this is art. Someone just paid $2 million for a banana duct taped to a wall.
Well, yes.
And then he ate it.
Not wrong. Not wrong. But what's like the closest comp that you can see in like everyday life? Because I think clothing is a strong comp.
Clothing
there.
Is like very,
cars.
Very
cars
close.
Cars is a good one.
Because like Cybertruck. Cybertruck
exactly.
is the line of demarcation.
Suck. Like, you suck. Look,
sorry, Scoot. For those who don't know, Scoot Henderson has a Cybertruck.
Of course,
he then he sucks. Yeah. Like that's a bad car to have.
I want to point this out real quick because it was very funny when he got it. His teammates were giving him hell. And they're like, but you all haven't even seen it wrapped yet. And they're like, it doesn't matter, dude.
No.
It doesn't matter.
No.
In fact, the wrappings look worse. Hot take, but they do.
Have you seen, there's one that goes around here. It's like wrapped in like, it's up and down the West Coast. It's been through Portland actually quite a few times because people have sent me pictures of it. It's one that it's like wrapped in like roast beef. It's not actual roast beef, but it like it looks like it's like folds of meat.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that rocks.
Yeah, no, it's like it's for a restaurant, like a some like deli or something like that. But like, yeah, it's over. But I think cars, Cybertruck is number one, right? Wait, like, are we in agreement of that? Like that.
I think you're right.
You're doing too much gold medal.
There was a point where it was the Tesla. Like,
but
and now I think
now they're everywhere.
Everyone has one.
They're so cheap now.
So can you start out as like a D-bag purchase and then become a non-D-bag purchase? Because like the Tesla is a non-D-bag purchase.
One. So Dusty and I, when we went to DC for Army Navy,
mm-hmm.
the entire, we were there, what, 4 or 5 days?
Yeah.
I think I saw two Teslas.
They're not there?
They're not there. Because
it's
such a West Coast car. Like they're just it's the granola hippie but you're right. I think you're onto something. There is like I think you can talk about that with clothing too of like what used to be like the D bag.
Like was Nike ever like a rough one
you
for you
me?
Or Adidas?
It's just Nike the all head to toe Nike guys. I am right now. I think.
Yeah, you are.
I fully embrace it. I am a swoosh bag.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
100%.
Yeah, ditto.
I mean. But I think it is interesting, like the lines of demarcation of like what we look at as socially acceptable versus like, no, we're just taking these people money because they want to chase clout.
Those 20, I think they're like in this version, 2025 Mercedes G-Wagons, you know, the Kardashian mobiles, I like to call them. I think they're going now for like 180, 200 grand. Those things plummet in value so fast. They are the biggest waste of money, probably next to a Cybertruck as far as cars go. And anytime I see one of those driving around, I'm like, D-bag, total douche. You spend way too much money on stuff that means nothing. Go spend that on a nice vacation, please.
Ooh, here's a good one. You know what? We're going to revisit this throughout the show.
We're going to have to.
Yeah, no, we're 100% going to revisit this because there's just too many good ones. But one to think about. Vancouver Ford text line, up-and-coming douchey purchase, super fancy cheeses.
Ooh. Or the fancy salts, like the Himalayan salts.
Oh, the pink Himalayan salt, which is actually funny.
Those people suck.
I will tell you right now, like most people use, like they're like, I'm going to cook with pink Himalayan salt. I have a buddy of mine who's a chef. He's like, I remember talking to him about this. I was playing like a video on IG of, you know, cooking videos. And somebody's like, I'm going to cook with pink Himalayan salt. And he got so irritated. He goes, you finish with pink Himalayan salt. You don't cook with it. I was like, you good, dude? He's like, no, this douchebag is just doing this to be a douchebag.
Like,
to your
this
point.
Guy is wrong. Yeah, he has the fancy salt. He knows.
Yeah, but it was like a properly trained, like French-trained chef. And he was just like, The he's boiling wrong. Frustration of like what he was doing. He was like, it doesn't matter if you cook with it. It's a finishing salt. It was like stuff like that's funny.
This is an old one, but my wife just texted in Hummers back in the day. Those Hummers. Were the ultimate douche
oh, yeah.
symbol.
Oh,
yeah.
That was the demarcation.
And there was a sliding scale. H2
Ooh,
versus
yeah,
H3.
Yeah, the tiny
Ooh, there
one
you
versus
go.
The big one.
This is a niche one, but anytime I see anyone in either the white tank top at the gym or in head-to-toe Gymshark, I instantly go the other way. I think you
suck. What if you're head-to-toe Gymshark, but you are just a massive unit of a human?
Haven't seen that person yet. I think that only exists on Instagram.
Okay.
Like, because every time you look at a Gymshark thing, dudes on Instagram look rocked up.
Yeah.
Dude, like, girls on Instagram with the Gymshark,
yeah.
they look awesome. Every time I go to the gym and I see
cheeks
someone in
cheeks,
it's like, dude, you don't wear Gymshark. Yeah. Like, every single
That's
time
not
I
for
see
you.
Someone. Well, it's just Gymshark. Like, it's a cool brand, find whatever. Yeah. But
the head to toe, it's like when you play basketball 24 Hour Fitness and the guy's wearing head to toe like NBA jersey shorts.
He's wearing the full LeBron.
Yeah.
Take the shooting sleeve off.
Yeah, yes. Oh, God. That one right there. I would rather a guy wear the jersey and shorts than the shooting sleeve.
Exactly.
Well, or the softball player that wears the pants and slides into second.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Exactly 100%. The shooting sleeve one, my mild joke on that one, I wear my knee braces and I wear sleeves over the top of them so I don't gouge somebody with
them.
Like,
yeah.
Even though they're rubberized, it's still it's not a fun thing to like.
No, you don't want to get hit.
If you get hit by that, I'm not going to feel it. You are. So I it looks like a shooting sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
So I grab one out of the bag, and one buddy of mine is like, "Brother, you are not putting on a shooting sleeve." And I went like this, like kind of like this works great for radio, but I kind of mimed that I was going to put it on my arm, and they just slid it up my leg. He's like, "Oh, that's right, you're washed." He's
like, "You've got the copper fits."
Yeah, exactly, 100%. Oh, speaking of wash, that's a good little pivot here. Is the SEC entirely washed? Notre Dame takes down Georgia and moves on in the college football playoff. We'll dive into that game next year on Danny and Dusty, 10 of the Fan. Notre Dame knocks down the Georgia Bulldogs in... Part of me wants to say it was the worst game of the bowl series so far. Of the college football playoff. Am I wrong?
As D-bag football guy would say, it actually was the best because it was a defensive battle. You just yes. don't appreciate it enough.
It was just, I mean, Riley Leonard completed 15 passes for 90 yards.
But here's the thing. That game was never going to be an offensive shootout. That game was exactly how every expert predicted it would be. It would be two really good.
It was ugly as sin.
It was going to be two really good defenses, and then whoever won the turnover battle is who was going to win that game.
Can I push back on that?
Yeah.
I don't think Georgia's this defense that people think they are. I think that they are not they're good and they can be very good. But they are not the Georgia of old.
I'm not claiming that.
They are not, and I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying that they are not two or three deep and they don't just come at you in waves. They are not this just menacing like that. That Georgia team from 3 years ago was, to me, on defense, what Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson were at LSU.
And that's fair.
Like, that defense was maybe the best modern-day defense we've ever seen.
And that's fair. And I don't know that we'll ever see that defense again. Or an offense like what you talked about with LSU.
Yeah.
Like, there's kind of belief right now with a lot of college football experts that this is the last, like, this Ohio State team, now that they're finally playing to their potential, this might be the last one that is this much better, like at their true peak than everyone else. Although there was some belief at the start of the year that that's what Georgia would be. And I'd push back on the defensive side because if you look at the big games that Georgia won, they won those strictly because of their defense. When they beat Texas, both times that they beat Texas, they won those games because that defense balled out. The first time when they played down in Texas, their defense turned Quinn Ewers over multiple times. They forced fumbles. They started their offense with short fields to go, and Carson Beck couldn't even find a way to screw those up. Then in the SEC championship game, you lose your starting quarterback halfway through. You're down in that game, and you completely shut Texas down the rest of the way, right? And this is a Texas team that has proven, you know, they played Clemson. They ran all over that defense, and that Clemson defense isn't bad. So I think that Georgia's defense was one of, if not the strongest, when it played at its true peak that we had seen this year. They're going up against a Notre Dame team that is in that same category when we're talking about defense, and they were down their best defensive end, right? And they still found a way to shut them down. I felt like Marcus Freeman frankly, coached probably his best
game.
Game
of his life.
It's his best game. Like, yeah. He gets a little bit of that James Franklin label of you lose in big moments. When you when the biggest moments come, Ohio State.
Like when you played Northern Illinois.
You put 10, well, he also lost to Marshall at one point, too. So remember that. Yeah. But when the biggest games have happened, what has he done? He puts 10 guys out two plays in a row against Ohio State, finds a way to lose that. You know, when he played, like, his big game this year was Texas A&M. His big game this year was Indiana. Those don't really count. So now you're getting to go up against Georgia. And to be fair to Kirby Smart, he does have a second string QB in. But I felt like Freeman coached on par. He had a couple mistakes, but then his genius play to have your punting group out on 4th and 11 and then 11 on 11 switch to get the offsides and get the first down. Like, that's fantastic.
It's a simple, subtle little thing that you keep worked in there and it works out well for you. I look at this game and I go, this is exactly what I saw from Notre Dame this season.
They're going to rely on that D.
We're going to need that for later.
Dang it.
Yeah.
Dang it.
That was just too clean.
Boom. Out of here.
Dusty will appreciate that one. But I mean, like that Georgia team, that, you know, outside of Tate Ratledge, their offensive line is not what it has been in the past. Their defensive front is not what it has been in the past. Their secondary, I mean, the Notre Dame can't attack it the same way that, you know, Texas did, in the sense of like, hey, we're going to play a little game called where's the underclassman DB. I mean, if you go back to that SEC title game, Texas should have won that game to me by 3 scores. It's just,
yeah,
they
played with their food.
They played with their food. They stepped on the rake, you know, swallowed the shotgun, whatever you want to say, as far as like the self-destructive behavior, it was bad. But this game was horrendous, but credit to Notre Dame for making it and keeping it horrendous. And I'm seeing on the YouTube chats, if Georgia would have had Carson Beck, they would have throttled Notre Dame. Carson Beck isn't good, guys. He's
no, he took a huge regression step.
You take a look, and this isn't me just being like anti-SEC or anti-Georgia. I actually like Georgia. Basically, every number on Carson Beck this year is horrendous. You look at the PFF stuff. You look at the NFL stuff.
His decision making is poor at best.
Brett Coleman from Underdog Fantasy has all the quarterback charting and year to year scouting. Basically, the same here are the markers that NFL teams kind of look at.
Right.
And it's all kind of a color coded from green being good down to red. You know, it's the transition. You know, 3-bar color chart. And Carson Beck's basically entire chart was just glowing red. There was nothing redemptive about him this year.
That being said, though,
his wide receivers suck.
His wide receivers are bad.
They are just not. It is not Ladd McConkey. It is not Brock Bowers. Those two dudes were absolute monsters.
Well, and Price wasn't able to play at the end of the year. You had to kick off, was it Ra-Ra was his name? They had to kick off at their second best wide receiver. So you had a wide receiver group that was poor. But the other thing, to be fair to Beck about, I think, is as poor as he was still the starter and was never benched for a reason. And so these people who came in and were like, well, Stockton's coming in and Nick Saban said that he's going to be great. I can't wait. They probably got an upgrade. And that's just wrong. Yeah. Like, I understand that it's easier to call for the backup quarterback.
It's always easy to call for the other guy.
But we're not in those meetings.
No.
We don't know what Stockton knows or doesn't know. We don't know how truly strong his arm is. Like, Kirby Smart is a championship coach. He's a smart coach. People would probably say that he's a top 3 to 5 coach in college football right now, currently. Yes,
100%.
That's what he is, right? He still went with Beck the whole year.
Yeah.
Never even entertained using Stockton. No. So
now it is, well, part of that, you know, we do have to recognize is NIL and commitments, things of that nature. Like, you can't make the changes maybe in the past that you could have. There are other things that play into that, and I'm sure that frustrates a lot of coaches. That is a reality. But I was talking to quite a few Georgia fans. Surprisingly, I know quite a few Georgia alum, and they were all at a Blazers game the other night, and they were at the SEC title game, and they were like, well, you know, Gunner's going to be the guy, and you know, we lost faith in Beck, and we all know the wide receivers aren't good, but you know, Stockton's got some mobility to him. And like that was a thing that they hammered. And I think that where you've got to give credit to Notre Dame is Gunnar Stockton didn't do a damn thing with his legs.
No, he had negative 23 yards. Now that's because of sack yardage.
But still, like,
he looked young.
Yeah.
Like on the fumble, right? You have to feel that defensive end as a quarterback. You have to feel the defensive end there coming off the edge. And it's a great play by Notre Dame's defensive end, but that completely flips this game. If you think about it, this game was close, and then two plays happened. The Notre Dame defensive end comes around the edge. He gets the strip sack. It's a great rush by him. But if Stockton just hitches up 1 yard, which is all he had to do, he should have been able to feel that. They don't fumble there, and Georgia goes into halftime, what, down 6-3?
Yeah.
Right? Well, now you fumble there.
And then
Leonard throws a touchdown, and then the next opening kickoff, you run it back for a touchdown. That was the ball game.
Yeah.
The ball game was won because Notre Dame forced a turnover deep in Georgia territory, and they ran a kickback. As soon as that happened, it was over because neither team's offense was going to move on the other defense. Yeah.
When we were wrapping up the show, 6-3, I want to say it was like 28 seconds to go.
Yeah.
And Georgia, I don't...
They hadn't moved. They didn't do anything.
I don't understand why they didn't just knee it out. Like
I would agree. Or I would run the ball.
It's 6-3.
I would run the ball in case something positive went your way. That's how I would handle it. But
you're
throwing there with a backup quarterback.
I just
doesn't make sense.
My whole thing was like, what are you doing here? You're deep in your own territory with the backup quarterback. It's 6-3. It's basically 0-0. You're going into halftime 0-0. Like, what? Who has momentum?
Right.
I think it was 28 seconds, remember right. It's
27.
Like, 27, yeah.
Even less.
It's like, what is the gain there? Yeah. What were they, the 23 yard line?
Inside of their own 30.
Yeah. It was I don't understand it. I don't get it. You make that play. And look, credit to Freeman and Notre Dame for, you know, making a play and then capitalizing on it and having Riley Leonard make the one throw of the game. Every time I look at Riley Leonard's stats, I get sick. 170 total yards.
He would be a great South Dakota State, North Dakota State quarterback.
Yeah.
That's exactly how he plays the game.
Just like 14 carries for 80 yards. Like, that's nice. Like, that's solid. But, I mean, he had a higher running average than he did passing average. He ran for 5.7 yards per carry. He threw for 3.8 yards per throw.
Someone with his hairline shouldn't be as fast as he is. Yeah. Like, that was the difference,
in this game. Or his complexion.
I'm just going to go with hair. As a bald man who has a receding hairline, he shouldn't be as fast as he is. But that was also the difference for Notre Dame. When they needed a big first down, Riley Leonard got it with his legs. Like, he's able to get the edge. Now, it'll be interesting to see how this game goes against Penn State, because it kind of feels like it's going to be a similar matchup to what Georgia was, right? It was the winner of this game between Notre Dame and Georgia, whichever team's quarterback played the best and whichever team got the most turnovers was going to win. Whoever won the turnover difference was going to win. And that's exactly what happened in this game. You forced three fumbles. You got two of them back. The Trevor Etienne one was the worst from Georgia because they were driving. That's after the big play. They're driving, and you force a turnover there to save the points, and then it starts your own drive, which led to 3 points for you. And then Riley Leonard didn't turn the ball over. And when you needed a first down, yeah, he didn't do it in the most traditional way for a quarterback, but he ran and got the first downs that you needed to keep drives moving, to put yourself in the opportunity to score. When you needed a touchdown with 20 seconds left to really put Georgia back on their heels, Riley Leonard got it. It didn't look pretty. Never will, but it was enough to get the job done. And I kind of think that's going to be the same thing with Penn State if Abdul Carter plays. If Abdul Carter plays, Penn State, they're not going to let this Notre Dame defense score more than maybe one, maybe two touchdowns, unless they get some turnover luck. And it's kind of the same thing with how this Notre Dame defense is built. Like, you're worried about them taking a step back. They lose their best defensive end in Mills. They didn't look lost at all. They went toe-to-toe with Georgia, and frankly, they kind of dominated Georgia. Again, to be fair, backup quarterback, first ever start, college football playoff.
Yeah.
It's still Georgia, and you dominated them, and you looked like you belonged.
And that's where this thing is going to go. We'll, as we pivot into next week, we'll talk about Penn State and Notre Dame and Texas and Ohio State, and it's going to be it's a fun little happy spot. I don't know if you guys saw this. I wanted to bring this one up just because It's an interesting, it's much like history. The winners get to shape the narrative. Ryan Day is out there saying that the rest versus rust discussion, they capitalized on it, and that's what helped catapult them to a win over Oregon. But first, here's Schultz with the Sports Center update. Winners get to write the history, whether it's war or football.
Is that Sun Tzu?
No, that's just an old adage.
I mean, you're not wrong. That just feels like whenever it comes to war, I just assume it's Sun Tzu.
Yeah,
it even sounds like something like a Winston Churchill would say or something.
To the victors go the spoils, that kind of thing. It's the same. It's the same nature. Ryan Day is following the win over Oregon, said, I think we've learned a lot about our team. I think we've grown a lot as a team, and I think we're banking on this to be our best football of the season. You can see the passion. I think the way that this format is and the way the playoffs are set now, it allows us an opportunity to grow as a team, to learn to get better late in the season. I did feel like if we could get a good win in the first game, we could build momentum. Now it's our job to keep the momentum. We have it right now. That doesn't mean we can't. It doesn't mean anything if we don't keep it. The Oregon game is over. The only thing that matters is the right game, as the game right here playing against Texas. And then he goes on to compare it to a wild card team in the NFL getting hot. And it's like, okay, dude, let's stop this here. Just because the New York Giants did it once doesn't mean like that's the model. It's like it's very much, and this is maybe very pertinent, and we'll get to this a little bit later. It's not like the Miami Heat going from the play-in and going to the finals is a good thing.
Right. Like, you know, the team wasn't set up for it. I think the difference here, and it's obvious why Ryan Day is starting this narrative, because he wants to do the whole, well, they all counted us out. And to be frank, a lot of people, myself included, did kind of count this team out. It was a lot of, look at what we are on paper, but you didn't show it a lot in games. Like, even when you played your best, which I thought they played really tough nose, strong football when they came down to odds in the first time. The defense looked good, save for a couple.
Clearly
for
wasn't
the
their best.
Right, but that was the best that they had shown at the 100%. Time. That or the Penn State game, where the defense just completely shuts out Aller and that whole Penn State offense. Offense does just enough to win the football game. And he's trying to create this narrative because he knows if they win the championship, the complaint from Ohio State fans is always going to be, well, you haven't beat Michigan. Born on third, Ryan. Crying Ryan.
Yeah.
But he can go back and say, well, I took a team that no one believed in, that you wanted to fire me as the head coach for, and I took them to a national championship. That's a great coaching job by me. And I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle for him. It was a poor coaching job at the beginning of the year, but it was a great adjustment job by Chip Kelly, by Knowles, and by Ryan Day. The defense is playing at a different level right now. The D-line seems to have been awoken. A D-line that you were happy if between Sawyer or JT, one of them showed up in a week. Now they're both showing up, and they're playing and living in the backfield of Tennessee's offense and in Oregon's offense. When it comes to offense, they finally stopped force-feeding the run game. Will Howard, who, look, I've been a known critic of his play style, looks like an NFL-level pocket passer right now. He's throwing balls exactly where they have to be, and his wide receivers are going up and getting them. Smith looks unstoppable. He looks like he's the best wide receiver in the country right now, and he's only going to get better. Yeah. Ibuka looks like he's the second best wide receiver in the country right now. His catch for his touchdown, to make it, 14-0 against Oregon? Mm-hmm. It's the best catch of the day, and that's including Jeremiah Smith going over two Oregon defenders and mossing them. Ibuka literally had one arm pinned to his hip. The ball was tipped, and he still caught it one-handed and ran into the end zone. And still didn't get tackled. Like, that's how good of a player that Ibuka is. And he gets a little bit of the shadow treatment, the Robin treatment to Batman, who is Jeremiah Smith. That's how good this team is. And so they stopped going to this run first, we're going to beat you up inside offense, to we're going to air it out. We have Ferraris. Let's drive them. That's why they're winning by so much now. That's why they're dominating teams.
I think it's more of a, to be blunt, I think Ryan Day's full of crap. I say this is the same thing when I irked Oregon fans when I talked about Lanning, as far as like the fake motivation stuff, because this is what coaches do.
They
you take whatever is in front of you, whatever your circumstance is, and you wrap your arms around it. It's the right thing to do. Like, fully. Like,
100%.
But I don't buy any of it. Like, do you really think that he wishes that he played another game? No. There isn't a coach. Like, for every Duck fan, it's like, well, it was too much because they had too much rest. I guarantee you put all 12 of these coaches in the same room and go, you can have 3 weeks off, or you can play an extra game. Every single one of them is taking the 3 weeks off.
Tell you right now, Penn State, Notre Dame, they wish they had that time off. Notre Dame would have their best defensive end. There's a chance that Penn State might be without their best defensive end.
There is a 100% chance they are all taking the time off because you want to be healthy. And yes, is 23 days too much? Yes.
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 We can agree there. 100%.
And for all of all of the teams that had byes that they lost. Well, all of those teams were probably, with the exception of Oregon, were probably seeded incorrectly. All of them but Oregon were seeded incorrectly. Georgia should not have been there. Boise State should not have been there. Arizona State should not have been there. I don't think anybody's going to argue that, and I think going forward, that is going to be rectified.
I would definitely say, like, I hate blaming something that you can't control that's going to be a part of what the process was, sure. No matter what. Like, I think that there's going to be a change. I don't know if it's 14 teams. I don't know if it's 16 teams. But don't expect this playoff format to be the playoff format for the next 10 years, the 14.
No, they're going to tinker for the next probably 3 or 4 years.
Right. They're going to make moves, and especially the Big Ten and SEC, they're going to try and set it up so they get more teams in guaranteed for their conferences. But when it comes to the rest versus rust, it's on you as a team to know, hey, we have X amount of time off. We need to come up with the best game plan so that we don't come out rusty.
Yeah.
And Buck and I literally interviewed Coach Lanning, and I liked his response. It was, we self-scouted. We went ones-on-ones. Mm-hmm. We tried to keep our guys in as much game mode as we could.
You're not letting guys go free for a week. Everybody's still coming in the building. You're
right.
Keeping the normalcy and the routine. Like,
100%.
And that is a difficult thing. I'm not downplaying it, Duck fan. Just chill on that. But using it as this crutch or as an excuse, I'm telling you right now, every single coach on that staff and every single coach on every staff is taking that time off over playing that game.
Agreed.
1,000 out of 1,000 times.
Agreed. And I agree with you that the seeding is wrong. Arizona State's a double-digit favorite, or underdog.
They were a 13.5-point dog.
Boise State was an 11.5-point dog. Georgia was without their starting quarterback. And then, look, Oregon ran into who I think is the best team left in the playoff.
They got buzzsawed.
You ran into a team that played a perfect first half.
Yeah. I don't even think they played a perfect first half. I think they played perfect five drives.
Like, it was unbelievable.
The second drive, they didn't score.
That's right. They got stopped.
Four or five drives. It was just over. Like, that's basically what it was.
Right. So, I think I might be inclined to keep an eye on this. Like, hey, maybe the bye, and I'm with you. I think the bye is too long. Like, as soon as conference championship game ends, you need to play the next round.
I have no problem with 2 weeks. I have no problem with 2 weeks off.
And would love for the conference champions to get a home game.
Yes, and I'm with you there.
I don't know that that's going to happen. But the Duck fans and Georgia fans and any other fan that is blaming the time off, I think that's just loser speak. Because you're blaming something else. Like, you knew what the deal was. You're blaming something else instead of looking inwardly into yourself of, where did we go wrong? Oregon, you had a bad game plan to go up against the changes that Ohio State threw at you, offensively and defensively. And then by the time you found your counterpunch, the game was over. It was done, right? You got to find a way to come up with a better game plan. You got to execute at a higher level on the player's side of it. Boise State, you ran into a team that was better than you. And they used their talent to wear you down. There was nothing that Boise State could do in that game. That wasn't you got out-prepared. That wasn't a coaching staff had a better game plan. It was, we have 5 stars. We have 4 stars. You have no stars. Yeah. We're going to dominate you. Arizona State, you had 2 players in Cam Scadaboo and Sam Levitt that played absolute hero ball.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a great defensive game plan where you took the aggression to Texas, and Texas played with their food too long. And then Georgia, you didn't have your starting quarterback. That's a big deal. And Carson Beck isn't even that good. He's not even that good, but you didn't have your starting quarterback. That's why you lost those football games. Also, don't turn the ball over. Don't fumble.
Now,
Travis Etienne.
Speaking of the SEC, they may have found an unlikely ally in Notre Dame. Is this some psyops? Tighten your tinfoil hats. We'll get to that here next year on Danny and Dusty, Tinny the Fan. The College Football Playoff has been asked to flip the dates and times of the Cotton Bowl and Orange Bowl after SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey said Thursday that he had made a request to change them. Why would Greg Sankey ask for this change? Well, Sankey's concern was a potential disadvantage for Notre Dame. Why would he care about Notre Dame? Well, on the off chance that Texas beats Ohio State, he very likely wants Notre Dame to have a chance to win that game because Notre Dame's not as good.
Not
and that gives the SEC the chance to win a title. He doesn't care about Notre Dame versus Penn State. Are you kidding me? All he cares about is he wants the Big Ten to get knocked down a peg and have an opportunity for the SEC to come out shining. Because right now, the SEC right now is, it's the full.
They're reeling.
It's the Simpsons gif. Stop. He's already dead.
Mm-hmm. They're reeling, man. They're reeling.
I did the math on this real quick when we were in the last segment. They're 7-6 in the bowls. And if you take Texas's two wins out, they're 5-6. The SEC is 5-6 in all of the bowl games.
I'm shocked.
Outside of Texas winning.
I was going to say, I'm shocked that it's that high, to be honest with you. Because in my head, it's just, well, South Carolina lost. Well, you know, Alabama lost. Texas A&M let it run down their leg in the second half. And maybe that's just because those are teams that I gambled on, and so that's why it sticks out. Because
oh, you know what? I actually missed one. It's actually 7-8-6 because I missed Florida Tulane because it was in the early bowl series.
Oh, there you go.
They're 8-6 with the Texas wins. But, again, that's with the Texas wins, and that's Florida beating Tulane. These are the SEC wins, okay? Florida beating Tulane,
mm-hmm.
Texas beating Clemson. Let me scroll. It's going to take a second. Vanderbilt beating Georgia Tech on Haynes King struggling there in the final.
Popular, great.
Arkansas beating Texas Tech.
Okay. Yeah.
Missouri beating Iowa barely.
That was a gross game.
Iowa put up 24 points.
Yeah. No, Iowa's offense was good this year. They had a lot of, well, good is a relative
term. Yeah, there you go.
Good is better than what they were. They hit a lot of overs this year.
Yeah. LSU beating Baylor. Texas beating Arizona State. And then Ole Miss beating the brakes off of Duke last night.
Which you knew Kiffin was going to do so then he could continue his raid of, we should have been in, we just messed up, and we played a better... His argument is always going to be that Florida team at the end of the year was a million years better than the Florida team at the start.
He's not wrong.
No, yeah, DJ Lagway's unreal.
How many losses did you have there, Ole Miss? Come on.
Yeah, well, no. You lost to Kentucky.
Exactly.
You lost to Kentucky. They have one Power 4 win. Yeah. It's against you at home.
And he might have made Jackson Dart a late second, early third round draft pick with another performance there where he just went nuts.
Well, I think Carson Beck helped in that as well.
You're not wrong.
27
of 35 for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. That was Jackson Tart's line last night. But I just found that interesting. You take a look at their wins. What's the impressive win here from the SEC?
Well, I follow Bud Elliott.
But let's go through the losses real quick. Yeah. Tennessee gets humiliated. Humiliated by Ohio State.
To be fair.
Just like Oregon.
And maybe this is because Oregon, I've worked with Oregon, right? That Tennessee loss looks a little bit better now. They just ran roughshod through two of the better defenses in college football.
The difference between Nico and Dylan is supposed to be pretty substantial, right?
Yep.
Okay. So Tennessee gets smashed. USC beats A&M. Navy beats Oklahoma.
What a great game.
Michigan and what's left of them. And I don't talk to me.
It was their backup defense.
Don't tell me about the transfers and guys sitting out bowls. No. You had way more talent on the field.
Well, and you had your number one quarterback who waited to declare for the NFL draft
until he played. Awful.
He was bad. Lots of turnovers. Your O-line looked bad.
Bielema embarrassed South Carolina out there taunting Beamer Ball. I mean, the losses were Notre Dame beating Georgia. The losses the SEC piled up were pretty substantial.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only, like, hey, they did well, to me, really is Texas.
Yeah, well, and this is what I was saying earlier. I follow, he's a really good college football expert. His name's Bud Elliott. He does some stuff with the Cover 3 podcast. He's really locked in on the recruiting side of things. And so his whole point on Twitter after Georgia lost to Notre Dame was, maybe Shane Gillis said the most important thing and the most insightful thing.
Alabama Jones?
In all of college sports and college football this last year. And it was, now that everyone can pay with NIL, all of a sudden the teams are a lot even. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Notre Dame was paying well before that. God, yes. I think that USC,
They have literal gold in their helmets, Will.
100%.
They're fine.
Shane is fitting his own narrative to the fact of, well, we never paid. You paid and cheated. I think they all paid. I think the difference is that back when it was quiet, back then it was illegal to do, so it was quiet.
My friend's brother was a starting quarterback at Notre Dame for a period of time. I know exactly where that came from.
But it was quiet, and the SEC was more open to, we are going to pay, and we're going to pay a lot of players, right? And now that the NIL is out in the open, it's public. You can do it. Every team has their list of donors. It's set up. The NIL fund is ready to go. All of a sudden, those teams aren't as deep. Because now Notre Dame can say, well, if Georgia's paying you this, we'll pay you the same amount, and you can come here and play quicker on defense. They've got 2 5-star defensive ends. Why don't you come over here and be our 1 5-star? And that's going through all of the different programs in their football organizations, in their football programs. They now can look and say, hey, do you want to go and sit for 4 years before you finally get to play when you're a senior? Or do you want to come here and we can get you playing in 2? And I think that's the biggest change right now. And I think that's why you're seeing some teams, like when I talk about Penn State, Notre Dame, and I mean, even Texas at this point, they haven't really been in the college football playoff, at least not to this nature. Texas did last year, but they hadn't been before that.
They're back. Like, that's, they're back.
They're starting to get back because they have good coaches who can drum up the fan base to get the NIL that they need, to get the recruits that they need.
Look, man, those Lambos that were sitting out there, just because they are rented didn't mean they didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah. No, it's the NIL world has, and the transfer portal, you got to combine those two things, because that allows, the transfer portal has allowed players to get out of places where they didn't want to be and didn't want to sit. And it has made college football, there's actual parity in this. There hadn't been parity in college football probably since the dawn of time. And there's some semblance of parity.
It's the little things. It's the little things.
Don't get me wrong. Like WSU, money. OSU, you're not going to be up there. But for the teams that have the money that can spend, you'll be up there. You'll have a shot.
Coming up next, we're going to deviate from football for just a little bit. Boy, you love to see it when the chickens come home to roost. We'll say that more in hour number 2 on Danny Dusty, 1080 The Fan.